From WHYY in Philadelphia, I'm Terry Gross with Fresh Air. On today's Fresh Air, Burt Bacharach and Elvis Costello join us to talk about their collaboration, the CD Painted from Memory. Bacharach also has a new box set collecting his many hit songs, including The Look of Love, Walk on By, Baby It's You, Promises, Promises, Do You Know the Way to San Jose, and What's New Pussycat. Also, Fresh Air's book critic, Maureen Carrigan, gives us her picks for the best books of the year. That's all coming up on Fresh Air. First, the news.
From National Public Radio News in Washington, I'm Corva Coleman. The United Nations says, or rather the United States says, sanctions will stay in place on Iraq unless Baghdad gets rid of its weapons of mass destruction. American National Security Advisor Sandy Berger told reporters a short time ago that the airstrikes on forces belonging to Saddam Hussein were successful.
He is weaker, deterrence is stronger, and the Middle East is safer than before the operation. Saddam has learned that we have not lost our resolve to block his aggressive aims.
Iraq has said it will never again work with United Nations weapons inspectors. The White House says it's now up to the UN inspectors to decide how they will operate in the future with Baghdad. The Palestinian Authority has lifted the house arrest order against the leader of the radical Islamic group Hamas. The move has increased tension with Israel. Each side accuses the other of stalling the Y River Peace Accord. Steve McNally reports from Jerusalem.
Yasser Arafat has freed Sheikh Ahmed Yassin, reversing his daring move to isolate the spiritual leader of Hamas. The group's military wing has carried out dozens of bomb attacks on Israel, and it had threatened Arafat's life over the crackdown. Yassin's arrest had come just days after the signing of the Y Accord and was applauded by Israel as a real sign Arafat would crack down on terrorism. Now the goodwill has disappeared and the Y deal is in the deep freeze. Israel reacted sharply, saying Arafat has got to decide if he's going to move forward or turn a blind eye to terrorism. The Palestinian Authority says the move is a goodwill gesture for the Islamic celebration of Ramadan. For NPR News, this is Steve McNally in Jerusalem.
Law enforcement agencies across North America are still looking for a man wanted for questioning in the murder of abortion provider Dr. Barnett Slepian. Mike McKay of member station WBFO reports from Buffalo.
One of two cars registered to James C. Kopp has been found in the Newark, New Jersey airport parking lot. The car had been there for an undetermined amount of time. FBI special agent in charge, Bernard Tolbert.
The information or the materials that we've gotten out of the car is being processed right now for any relationship to this particular investigation. We're continuing to do that, and at this point we're not prepared to mention specifically what we found in the car.
Police continue to look for Kopp's second car, a green 1997 Dodge Aspen with Vermont plates. Investigators confirmed today that they have information placing Kopp in the Buffalo area 4 days prior to the murder of the Amherst doctor, but they still don't have confirmation that Kopp was in town the day of the killing. Police continue to say Kopp is not a suspect, but is a material witness. For NPR News, I'm Mike McKay in Buffalo.
On Wall Street, the Dow Jones Industrials are up more than 100 points at 9,145 in moderate trading. The Nasdaq is up 33 at 21.54. This is NPR. In NPR's business update, stock traders call this the Santa Claus rally. It's the traditional lift in the stock market toward the end of every year. Right now, several major indices look like they're on track to set record highs. NPR's Corey Flintoff reports.
At this hour, the Dow Jones Industrial Average is up 100 points to 9,145. The NASDAQ Composite has gained 33 points, or more than 1.6%, and the S&P 500 is up 13 points in record territory. One of today's big movers is America Online, which shot up after it was named as a new component of the S&P 500. None of this means that stocks will keep climbing. In fact, trading is expected to slow this afternoon as traders leave early in advance of Friday's Christmas holiday. Tomorrow's markets will have a shortened session, closing at 1 p.m. Eastern Time. Stock trading was quiet in overseas markets. Tokyo's exchange was closed for a national holiday, and most European markets posted solid gains in light trading. Corey Flintoff, NPR News, Washington.
Athletic shoemaker Nike is telling most of the 230 pro basketball players it has under contract that it won't pay for their endorsements this quarter. The shoemaker says this is because of the NBA labor dispute. Nike says the basketball lockout is hurting fans, the sport, and the value of its investments in the NBA. Nike's competitor Adidas is paying its endorsements still, but Peter DeFila says it has to cut off some NBA endorsement payments. Shares of Volvo are sharply higher in trading today. This after a Swedish report indicated Volvo is talking with American automaker Ford. I'm Corva Coleman, NPR, Washington.
Support for NPR comes from Borders Books and Music in more than 200 neighborhoods across the United States, where browsing is a fine art. 800-644-7733.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Elvis Costello and Burt Bacharach would have been unlikely collaborators in the 70s, when Bacharach was famous for his harmonically and rhythmically complex and highly orchestrated pop songs, and newcomer Costello was performing unpolished, high-energy pub rock. This unlikely duo was formed 3 years ago when they were asked to co-write a song for the film Grace of My Heart. They continued to write songs together and now have a CD featuring the results. It's called Painted from Memory. Costello sings, with Bacharach conducting the orchestra and playing piano. There's also a new Burt Bacharach box set that includes the songs he's best known for, such as The Look of Love, Walk on By, Anyone Who Had a Heart, I Say a Little Prayer, and Alfie. Before we meet Burt Bacharach and Elvis Costello, let's hear their song In the Darkest Place from their new CD. Burt Bacharach, Elvis Costello, welcome to Fresh Air.
Hi, how you doing?
who did what on that song?
I sang. Elvis played the piano, and we split the girl's part at the end.
Yeah. I meant in the composing.
We shared it, you know.
Like most of the songs. I think there's a couple on the record that Bert wrote all the music about, just because one of us would propose the opening of a song, and if there was nothing to add, there's no point. If something's beautiful the way it is. But most of the songs are like a dialogue in music, I think. Isn't that correct, Ben?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So where did In the Darkest Place start?
It started really with Elvis had the first six bars or something. In the Darkest Place.
Yeah. I know there's a tape of me on the plane, like talking into it. I think I was flying out to see you and get started with one of these things. And I'm like, you know the way when you got the noise of the plane? In the background, and there's this like voice going, "In the darkest place," just the merest outline of the melody, you know. And then I developed it in there, played it to Bert, and I think whatever came next is what you suggested.
Yeah, it's probably seven bars of that original verse, and then it branches off into a B section, then comes back to those six bars that initiated. And you know, it's just like a stockpiling, and that song basically. I always write something, then we connect it, and, you know.
Now, I know for God Give Me Strength, you both worked through fax machines and phone answering machines. You weren't in the same room together ever while writing that. Did your collaborative style change and evolve for the new CD when you were writing a whole bunch of songs together?
Well, certainly the situation now of being in the same room together and being able to know one another and being able to be verbal about, I don't like that as much as I like this, or I don't like that at all, or let's try it this way. You know, you're kind of walking on eggshells with a 5-day time period to get everything done on that first song, God Give Me Strength, and not being in the same room in different countries. And, you know, tentative about it. You don't know. You know, it's like that first date. You're super careful on what you don't want to offend the other person, and you don't want to be offended yourself.
Elvis Costello, what have you learned from working with Burt Bacharach about the construction of songs, about harmonics and meter and all of that?
Well, obviously you have different dispositions about harmony. And also, I mean, I've always been intrigued by Burt's use of uneven meter. And I can't say I've imitated it, but I found myself doing it. I think if you're not a particularly schooled musician, you might do it in a very natural way. And I think the reason that those odd bars now and again in Burt's compositions work so effectively is because they're never done with self-consciousness. They're done to enhance the naturalistic way in which people express themselves. I think it mirrors the way we speak or the way we think in uneven phrases. We don't think all exactly in 4/4. And therefore, you know, we confide and then we suddenly blurt something out. Well, I think that's where the passion lies in his compositions.
I've tried to never do it for effect or
never,
just to
never
be different.
Seems for effect, you know?
I mean, sometimes I got a little bit perplexed when I tried to write it down and suddenly realized, oh, my God, it's a 7/8 bar, you know?
But it feels natural. When we perform Anyone Who Had a Heart, I never think twice about what it is. I mean, we've been performing some of Burt's songs that contain, and there are some aspects of them. I mean, My Thief has a bar of 5/4 in the first verse, in each of the opening verse. And it doesn't seem unnatural. You know?
Well, we want to not only make it feel natural for you, the comfort level, as songwriters, but also that listening audience out there that's not going to see that as a pimple going by, that 5/4 bar.
Throw them on another foot, and that, you know, it's not as if we're making dance records, but there should
not.
Be.
We're not. Now you tell me, Elvis.
Oh, no.
You said, come on, we're going to, after God Give Me Strength, it'll all be like dancing.
Yeah.
Well, you know, when I, like, for instance, listen to Promises, Promises, I never thought to myself, gee, what a tricky set of time signature changes. But, and the sheet music, if you look at the sheet music, the line promises, those kind of promises take all the joy from life. There's one bar of 3/4, followed by a bar of 4/4, followed by a bar of 6/4, then 3/4, 4/4, then 6/4. And then promises, promises, my kind of promises, that's 3/4, 3/8, and then 4/8. I mean, who even sees 3/8 in sheet music? So, Burt Bacharach, these kind of shifts just come into your mind, and then you write them down, and that's when you realize how tricky they are?
Well, I think that was driven, that certainly was driven by the intensity of what that had to say theatrically on stage. And
right, because that was written for the show, Promises, Promises.
Right. So it had to have a drive of its own.
Mm-hmm.
And, I heard it, played it, then started to notate it, write it down. Oh, my goodness, we got a 3/8 bar. And here comes another 3/8 bar, because it can't be a 6/8 bar, putting the two 3/8s together. It's a 3/8, it's a 3/8, it's a 4/8. And even when I'm doing it, like, with a symphony orchestra now, try to get them to think, to add one thing. Instead of just counting the 3/8, 3/8, 4/8, to hear what the girls are singing or hear the musical content rather than reading those eighth notes and go, promises, promises, and one. So right there, that takes care of your 7/8 bar, you see? Promises, promises, and one. Bum, dun, 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 dun. But if they don't sing in their head, I mean, the background voices and the strings are playing da ba da ba da da. See? The girls are going promises, promises. And the trumpet players have to come in one beat later. So it'd be promises, promises, bum, bum. But if they can hear in their head promises, promises, and one, if they count that way, it's a breeze. It's simple.
It's a music lesson for you.
Of course, the symphony orchestra sometimes would look at me with great dismay and say, what is this man saying?
I mean, this is the kind of stuff that you can everyday work together throws up, you know. Obviously, to go back to your question about harmonics, or harmony, I should say, I've written a good degree of music down, particularly when I've worked with musicians from the classical and jazz field who are more used to the written page. But when it comes to popular song, of course, working in a rock band, you hardly ever write anything down. Sometimes a string overlay of a rhythm section, but the rhythm section parts, the chord progressions are very simple, and it would be stupid to write them down. They're too easy to remember. You would inhibit yourself in the communication.
But don't you think that orchestration aside, that a lot of rock musicians don't even know most of the chords or many of the chords that Bacharach would use in his compositions? You know, that the more complicated jazz chords, for instance.
Very possible.
Or they stumble on them and they don't know them by name, or they don't know them instantly. But you do hear some very complex things happen in records that they're just not necessarily schooled in.
Because
right.
But the interesting thing for me is the rock musicians, and this is generalization, that have trouble there and don't necessarily play that minor second and that chord, or don't hear it, or don't understand how to hear it enough to play it on the guitar or on the keyboard. I find that like the same level of not knowing, not being able to translate onto paper what they play. R&B players, it's a different thing. Yeah. They go to the minor second like it's in their system, in their blood. Yeah. It's a natural thing. They go into different kind of loops, both rhythmically and harmonically. Because it's and they may not be able to write it down.
Yeah, there's also the other side of it, isn't there? That it can be a loop, and you get jazz players who defer to particular intervals that allow them to speak in a language that's understood by other jazz musicians. But that you're starting to hear these voicings all the time, and they can't play a playing chord. You know,
yeah,
they couldn't play a playing chord.
Well.
It's almost like a heresy to them. And I think there's a little bit of a trap in that than only
Absolutely.
Being able to voice in complex harmony and to not see that there is a beautiful thing in
Williams' song.
We're just playing harmony. You know,
I understand that when I have to go to a choice of do I end it with just a straight C triad?
Yeah.
Well, Burt Bacharach, what influenced you harmonically? What music were you listening to that you think formed your basic, musical harmonic mind?
I think when I did get interested in music, it certainly was the French Impressionist. It was Ravel, Debussy, and Rachmaninoff. And suddenly to hear what was going on in the world of jazz opposed to the world of jazz that I knew before, coming from listening to the Dorsey Band or Harry James. And suddenly somebody opened this giant door and there was Dizzy Gillespie and Tad Dameron and Charlie Parker, Thelonious Monk. It was like another light years away.
And why do you think that rather than becoming, say, a bop musician or bop composer arranger, you went into pop instead?
Oh, I don't think I would ever have been a good enough jazz pianist, bop pianist. I was influenced by it. But the same reason I never became a serious classical composer, starting with Darius Milhaud and Henry Cowell. It was a learning process. I liked the music, appreciated the music. I always felt that if I pursued it, I'd be writing maybe on a commission from a symphony, that I'd hear the work 2 years later. I'd have to supplement my income or make money teaching at a university. It's a hard row, I like a nice place to live in, and I wasn't going to get it that way. I like the comfort level a little too high. And the other thing is, I just didn't want to do it enough. Maybe that's the biggest, but there'll never be a regret coming from me, where I'll say, oh, God, it'd just been different if I'd written that one great symphony. Well, that's off the list. That's just fabrication in my mind for me to ever say.
Yeah.
I had one regret that my mother, was so disappointed because Leopold Stokowski asked me to write a piece years ago, probably when Promises, Promises was out there, and I was commissioned by the American Symphony. And, you know, they said, we'll premiere it in 3 years. And I was used to the gratification, you know, of write a song, go into the studio, make the record, and hear it on the way home. Hear it on the way home or the next morning when you turn on the radio. 3 years.
That's a long time, isn't
long it? Long time. And I took a pass, and I was fine taking a pass on it. But my mother was very disappointed.
Yeah. My guests are Burt Bacharach and Elvis Costello. Their new CD is called Painted from Memory. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guests are Burt Bacharach and Elvis Costello. Their new CD features songs they co-wrote. I asked Elvis Costello what he learned from working with you, Burt Bacharach. What did you learn from working with Elvis Costello? Do you feel like you were exposed to any new ideas or new ways of working?
Well, there's a comfort level working with Elvis because we both share a similar platform, which is care immensely about our work, obsessive about it.
Mm-hmm.
When things aren't working, it drives us equally nuts. I've worked with writers that, you know, treat it like I come in at 10 in the morning, I work till 5. I will not think a thing about this piece of music that I'm working on till tomorrow.
It's impossible.
When the office hour.
It's impossible.
But I mean, we Elvis and I are working, and, you know, it's just a, you know, double obsession going on. Nighttime, daytime.
That's the album title. Now you say it.
Double obsession.
Double obsession.
Well, I hope that the obsession is often along the same lines, because if you were both obsessing in different directions, that would make it difficult.
No, we're just going after what to make every cut on this record, everything that we write, as good as we can make it in the writing process, as good as we can make it in the recording studio, and very careful with it. Careful in the sense of not just examining it too closely, but making it really shine through as much as we're capable of. And we're both hard on ourselves.
Let me play God Give Me Strength, which was the song that you first collaborated on for the movie Grace of My Heart. And it's the last track on your new CD, Painted from Memory. Do you want to say anything about writing the song before we hear it?
If anybody's seen Grace of My Heart, I mean, it follows the story of a songwriter who goes through all sorts of tribulations romantically. And where this song appears in the story, it had to fulfill a certain role. So that actually helped us, I think, in getting our collaboration started.
Mm-hmm.
It got us past the, you know, we might have said, right, we're going to write all songs about pomegranates or something. You know, I mean, could have taken an abstract idea, you know. Instead of which, we had a very, very definite framework. And once we'd created that song, particularly after we recorded it 6 months later for the end titles, initially just for the end titles, I think it was inevitable that we would write more songs together. It just felt too good, and the experience of recording together felt too good. And I hope you can hear that in the record. The record starts so gently. It's the quietest record I'd ever made up to that point, but think where it ends up. It also has one of the biggest crescendos of any record I've appeared on.
Right.
And not a record that comes in, you know, and gives you everything about it in the first 4 to 8 bars, but something that really develops. I mean, I couldn't believe it when I came to the studio and Burt played me the orchestration at the piano, played through it, that it was going to be something like this. And then to be in the studio singing with the rhythm section and then to hear the orchestration added to that, it's absolutely a thrill. You know, it's still a thrill when I hear it.
Well, let's hear it. This is God Give Me Strength, written by Burt Bacharach and Elvis Costello, now featured on their new CD, Painted from Memory.
Nothing. So God, give me strength, 'cause I'm weak and awake. And if I'm strong, I might still break. And I don't have anything to share, but I won't throw away into the air. That song is sung, this bell is rung. She was the light that I'd bless. She took my last chance of happiness. So God, give me strength. God, give me strength.
As God Give Me Strength, originally written for the movie Grace of My Heart, now featured on Elvis Costello and Burt Bacharach's new CD, Painted from Memory. God Give Me Strength opens with a lovely flugelhorn line. And Burt Bacharach, I mean, your arrangements are filled with flugelhorns and trumpets. I mean, there's so many songs of yours where that's just, I've come to think of it as a signature. I was wondering if you ever played trumpet, or, you know, why you hear trumpets in so many of your songs.
It's a very expressive instrument. You know, for a singular, it's one of the few instruments when I could say make a statement, set up on an intro or a figure. It speaks more vocal than like a flute would have, or a clarinet, or a saxophone is a little bit of another picture. But I used to write dummy lyrics on flugelhorn parts, just on introduction things, just so they weren't just notes. So the flugelhorn player would be able to see the note, sing the note, even though it made no sense. It was a lyric, but it made no sense. But it just had the right sound, vocally, vowel-wise, for that right note. Trumpet players in the original times when we were recording, till they got to know me, thought I was nuts. But there is something about it, you know? Just say, sing it.
Burt Bacharach and Elvis Costello, they collaborated on the new CD Painted from Memory on Mercury Records. The new Bacharach box set is on Rhino Records. They'll be back in the second half of the show. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.
City streets you used to walk along with me, and every step I take recalls how much in love we used to be. Oh, how can I forget you when there is always something there to remind me, always something there to remind me. I was born to love you, and I will never be free. You'll always be a part of me. Oh, whoa, 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 whoa. When shadows fall, I pass the small cafe where we would dance at night. And I can't help recalling how it felt to kiss and hold you tight. Oh, how can I forget you when there is always something there to remind me, always something there to remind me. I was born to love you, and I will never be free. You'll always be a part of me. Whoa, 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 whoa. Whoa, 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 whoa.
Coming up, more about songwriting and performing from Burt Bacharach and Elvis Costello. And our book critic, Maureen Corrigan, presents her list of the best books of the year.
What's new, pussycat? Whoa, whoa, whoa. What's new, pussycat? Whoa, 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 whoa. Pussycat, pussycat, I've got flowers and lots of hours to spend with you. So go and powder your cute little pussycat nose. Pussycat, pussycat, I love you. Yes, I do. You and your pussycat nose. What's new, pussycat? Whoa, whoa, whoa. What's new, pussycat? Whoa, whoa, whoa. Pussycat, pussycat, you're so thrilling and I'm so willing to care for you. So go and make up your big little pussycat eyes. Pussycat, pussycat, I love you. Yes, I do. You and your pussycat.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross, back with more of our interview with Burt Bacharach and Elvis Costello. They have a new CD featuring songs they co-wrote, with Costello singing and Bacharach playing piano and conducting the orchestra. There's also a new Bacharach box set featuring his many hit songs, including Don't Make Me Over, I'll Never Fall in Love Again, Wishin' and Hopin', and That's What Friends Are For. So, Burt Bacharach, I want to get back to the idea that you often have a dummy lyric in your head when you're writing a melody, or even when you're just writing an instrumental line in the arrangement. Can you give me an example of a song that you wrote a dummy lyric for just on the trumpet line?
Say I had a figure that went, ba-dum, ba-dum, ba-dum. Okay, and that was trumpets were going to play then. Now, rather than just notate it that way, I might write something very big with putting hole on. I like that expression. It just kind of fits a lot of different figurations. So that could have just been, hold on, and I'll be there. Now, you say, in the hands of a good flugelhorn player, he'll get that. He'll understand that. He'll understand that better. Because to understand, it's not how long you hold the note, because it's notated. A dotted eighth note. Sure, that's how it will probably speak. But he understand if you sang it, just where you release that note.
There's one example, isn't there, in This House is Empty.
Yeah, there's a good
where,
one.
Where Bert was just playing the opening music, or the opening, you know, statement of the verse, at least. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And you just went, remember? And that was the only word, and the word "remember" seems so central to the emotional weight of that passage of music that I took and kept. I tried to protect that word "remember" and wrote the lyric around that word that Bert put in. So he effectively did write one word of that lyric, but you know the point is that it had some emotional weight, and it was immediately apparent to me that it was a song of some kind of reminiscence, some sort of maybe quite tragic reminiscence as well, as it turns out, in the way the song developed. But that was a good clue for me. You know, I'm looking for clues like that. And funnily enough, I don't know whether this is anything to do with some sympathy we have musically, but of course I'm the third in four generations of musicians in my family, and I'm the trumpet player that let the side down by never taking the instrument up. My grandfather, both trumpet players, so I have a real love of the trumpet too. So it's no problem if trumpets appear. Although my own disposition, if I'm let to orchestrate, is towards dark reeds, funnily enough. Not even saxophones, but cor anglais and bass clarinet are my two favorite orchestral instruments.
And that chases me right out of the studio.
Trying to persuade me to put a cor anglais on an introduction. Although I did manage to persuade you to put an oboe.
The oboe was a very good idea.
Because, you know, sometimes you want to get away from the, like in the song Long Division, you have that's the closest to a groove song on the record, where there's a kind of an R&B groove going, and the song is harmonically quite different than many R&B songs, but there is a groove throughout with percussion and drums and soft keyboards, and I felt that a saxophone on top of that...
Which was my instinct.
Yeah, would maybe just be that little bit too... And Elvis much like totally another right. piece in the puzzle that fits naturally. And I thought one incongruous element, like an oboe, would maybe make the record more distinctive, and it ended and up... It adds
Elvis
a little
totally
poignancy
right.
to
Absolutely.
It.
We mentioned This House is Empty now as having music mostly by Burt Bacharach with Elvis Costello, you doing the lyric. Why don't we hear that, since you just mentioned it, from the new CD featuring collaborations from Elvis Costello and Burt Bacharach.
These rooms play tricks upon you. Remember when they were always filled with laughter. But now they're quite deserted. They seem to just echo voices raised in anger. Maybe you will see my face reflected there. Nothing I can do to make you want to stay. So tell me, how am I supposed to live without you?
As This House is Empty Now from the new Elvis Costello Burt Bacharach record, Painted from Memory. I want to play another record here, and I thought that we'd play the Elvis Costello version of the Burt Bacharach Hal David song, I Just Don't Know What to Do with Myself.
Oh my God!
And this is a great song, and there's great recordings of it. Elvis, I love your version of it, and then there's of course the Dusty Springfield version, which is a classic. And on the new Rhino box set, it also features the original version of the song by Tommy Hunt. So before we hear all three versions, Burt Bacharach, would you tell us about writing the song?
In the Brill Building days, where Hal and I would work every day, we had a whole roster of Scepter artists that were potentially artists to record. And I guess that was going to be either for Chuck Jackson or for Tommy Hunt. And I went in, wrote the orchestration, made the record with Tommy. And that was the initial record. I liked the record. I liked the way he sang, too. So... You know, every other record afterwards is a different record in a way than what the original was.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they might be better, but you know, they can't. The original often comes right out of the bed with me.
So but, after Tommy Hunt recorded "I Just Don't Know What to Do with Myself," did you rethink the song for Dusty Springfield when you arranged it for her?
No, Dusty. I didn't do Dusty. Dusty did it with whoever was writing arrangements.
I think one of the things, we've been through this process because being as this is the song that I have the longest history with as a professional singer, we wanted to include this song in our concerts, in our recent concerts. And of course, it's a question. The parts for that original Tommy Hunt record are long lost, and it was a question of having somebody transcribe a hybrid from the two records, because I learned the song from Dusty's version, and that's imprinted on my mind. And we went back and had... the skeleton of the arrangement transcribed back, and you can hear how whoever transcribed this record, it's a shameless copy in certain respects of your orchestration, but there are certain voicings that are wrong. If you compare them, they're actually, you know, they're wrong, you might say, in the sense they've misheard what's going on in the Tommy Hunt version. They're so trying to keep so close to it, I don't think they've changed them deliberately. I think they're just mishearing. And if you listen on to Me and the Attractions stumbling through it in 1977, you'll hear still a further mishearing of a chord or two. And that's part of it. You know, I get slightly embarrassed when I hear that record now, because I hear the naivety of the approach, but also hear the feeling
that's
in all of these versions.
Absolutely,
and the one thing, that is a journey that a song can go on. And I mean, some of Burt's songs have gone on more extraordinary journeys. If you listen to I Say a Little Prayer as done by Aretha Franklin or as done by Roland Kirk, you'll hear an even more radical transformation,
right.
You know.
Well, right now, why don't we hear I Just Don't Know What to Do with Myself, and first we'll hear Tommy Hunt, then Dusty Springfield, then Elvis Costello.
I just don't know what to do with myself. Don't know just what to do with myself. I'm so used to doing everything with you, planning everything for two. And now that we're through, I just don't know what to do with my time. I'm so lonesome for you, it's a crime. Going to a movie only makes me sad. Parties make me feel as bad when I'm not with you. I just don't know what to do. Like a summer rose needs the sun and rain. I need your sweet love to be all okay.
I just don't know what to do with myself.
Those are three versions of the Burt Bacharach Hal David song, and we heard Tommy Hunt, then Dusty Springfield, then Elvis Costello, and my guests are Elvis Costello and Burt Bacharach, and they have a new CD of their song collaborations, and it's called Painted from Memory. Burt Bacharach, when did you first hear Elvis Costello's version of that?
You know, I'm not sure. I did back when it was recorded. I did hear Elvis do it about 4 years ago live at the Troubadour. It was Steve Naive, piano, an acoustic concert, and I thought it was brilliant. You know, it was great. I have to confess, I often did not listen to covers or things that would come in. I don't defend that position. If Elvis's record had come in and somebody called it my attention, what is it, 1974? Was that when
77.
When that record came in, I think probably at the time, I wasn't listening to anything, any covers that were coming in, you know.
Uh-huh. I think anyway, that's a fairly obscure release. You know, it wasn't like a single where we covered it and tried to, you know, there were
this is my nature. Yeah. What it's been is, well, that was written, that's done. Somebody else did that. Elvis Costello did it, great. Yeah, yeah. But not, you know, I was too into, okay, we got to work today. We got to write something.
right.
The next song. I was into the next song of it rather than.
Yeah.
I figure when I stop writing and ancient, then they'll bring in all these old records. And I'll spend the last days of my life listening to all the records of my songs that I never heard.
My guests are Burt Bacharach and Elvis Costello. Their new CD is called Painted from Memory. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guests are Burt Bacharach and Elvis Costello. Their new CD features songs they co-wrote. It seems to me your career started in really opposite places. Elvis Costello, you started in pubs in England, and Burt Bacharach, you started being music director for people like Vic Damone and the Ames Brothers, Joel Grey, then Marlene Dietrich, and you were in, like, the big nightclubs.
Yeah, but I was in bars, too, first.
Were you?
I had a job playing in New York City and up in Cape Playhouse Restaurant. Got fired. Wow, that hurt.
Why'd you get fired?
Maybe they didn't like the way maybe I didn't have a big enough repertory to know all the Rodgers and Hart songs and Vernon Duke songs. I don't know why I got fired. It really hurt. Huh. I thought I played well enough. I couldn't come home. I was in high school or something up in the Cape. So I took a lesser job in a lesser club and got lobster every Tuesday night and very little money. And didn't get fired.
You see, it's not that different. I remember the very first time I ever got paid to play, and it was like in a music pub. And as you said, they had a good music scene in London when I was there in the mid-70s. And I got paid 50 pence and a plate of sandwiches. 50 pence, like half a pound, you know? That was the share of the door that night, you know. And I would do a residency there, and they would just give you the...
Yeah, that's great.
You know, that's pretty good. 50 pence, you know. That wasn't even my fare home, you know?
You know, I took a job, like... on Fire Island,
yeah,
at a bar and a restaurant. Some woman I saw the other night, she said, I remember you were there. I said, you know, there used to be 10 people on a Saturday night in this bar.
And she remembers being there?
Well, no, 10 people at the start of the summer.
Yeah,
it was called the Bayview in Ocean Beach, yeah. Fire Island. And they offered me the job. 10, 11 regular bar people there. Third week, some guy wrote a review in the newspaper. And then you had to have a bouncer.
Yeah.
But I was only getting $40 a week. I had a chance for a percentage. $40 for a weekend, all the food, and all the martinis I wanted to drink.
I think the place you're playing, you probably got lobster and martinis, and I was getting, like, yesterday's ham sandwiches, you know. I think slightly better.
But Bacharach, I'm wondering what you learned from watching Marlene Dietrich perform, what you learned about what songs went over with an audience and how people put songs across to an audience
that helped you later
in your career as a composer.
I don't know that I learned things about like what songs were. I did understand the theater of it all with Marlena.
Uh-huh.
I did understand how she drove for every detail until it was perfect. I mean, we would go into the Olympia Theater in Paris, rehearse an orchestra. This was her request. This was her wish for 8 days. You know, this orchestra is over-rehearsed by the second day. What you do with an orchestra to keep them going for 8 days? But to do the song goes, see what the voice, over and over again by the sixth day. So you just had to keep them.
Particularly a Parisian orchestra. I bet that was
real
fun.
Yeah, that was good. Yeah. Really good. And in Russia, too. I mean, if just... it was, and she'd stand in front of a light and be lit and call the directions, standing rigid there for like 4 hours, 5 hours, until she got it exactly the way she wanted.
And we thought we were obsessive.
Good things. Yeah. We're obsessed about good things.
Yeah.
What was it like for you when you started writing for rhythm and blues acts and rock and roll performers after working, you know, for older performers and for older audiences in clubs? You know, because when you started writing, I mean, you know, people like the Shirelles, you know, the Drifters, Jerry Butler. I mean, this is such a real
All the time I was really conducting for whether it was Vic Damone or the Ames Brothers, I was always thinking, I got to try to write some songs.
Mm-hmm.
This is what I should maybe do. So I was still writing songs. I was writing songs when I was conducting for Dietrich. I'd be somewhere in Warsaw, and the Shirelles record was sitting at number 4 in the country or something. And it would make, if you really looked at it and looked at the kind of material I was doing with Dietrich and the kind of musical stuff that was coming out there, and hearing Jerry Butler doing Make It Easier and stuff at the same time, or Chuck Jackson... it made no sense at all. It was like a 360-degree turn from go see what the boys to I just don't know what to do. You know, so
There's something in there, though, somewhere, isn't there? Don't you think out of the whole... We've talked about this before, and I don't know, I wouldn't put you on the spot, but, I mean, I'd say there's bits of Anyone Who Had a Heart and What's New Pussycat, you know? What's New Pussycat It all comes out there somewhere along the line, maybe a couple of years later, you know?
It's possible. I just remember playing the Olympia once with Dietrich and Quincy Jones coming backstage, you know, and I was having hits. Yeah. And Quincy was my friend. He came backstage. He said, "What are you doing, man? Why are you doing?" I said, "Well, listen, Q, she's great. I get to see the world. She trusts me. It's a challenge for me conducting this orchestra, making her sound as good as I can make her sound. It's about music."
Well, that reminds me. Do you know if a lot of people are lining up to record the songs that you've written for your new CD?
Well, I know some people have already lined up to record them for a Verve album, which is coming out in the new year, I understand. Bill Frisell arranged for a beautiful ensemble of Curtis Fuchs and Billy Bruce, Don Byron, Ron Miles, Victor Krauss, and Brian Blade. So it's a horn and reed lineup, no keyboard at all. And they've done Bill's interpretation, transcriptions of the songs, largely instrumental. And Cassandra Wilson makes a guest appearance on that, singing Painted from Memory, a very beautiful version. And I make a guest appearance on the record. But beyond that, we've heard of one or two things about people covering the songs, but, I mean, it's early days yet. I'd be sort of surprised if somebody didn't attempt to cover one of them.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems that, Bert Bacharach, I don't know if you've been writing a lot of songs lately, but does this have you going again, you know, writing songs? I know you're also scoring the new Bette Midler film about Jackie Suzanne.
Right.
But just in terms of, like, writing songs, is this... kind of reinvigorated your
songwriting?
Sure.
Well, this was a real purpose. This was a goal. This was like, we're going to make an album. Different than me making a writing date in L.A. and saying, let's write a song and see. Maybe we can get it to babyface for one of his artists, you know? Or send it to Clive Davis in New York.
Absolutely.
See if Whitney might consider it.
Yeah, that's a different kind of game, you know. That's kind of like currying favor with Roman emperors, you know.
Hard game.
Well, I want to thank you both so much for talking with us. It's really been great fun. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for having us.
Elvis Costello and Bert Bacharach collaborated on the new CD, Painted from Memory, on Mercury Records. The new Bacharach box set is on Rhino Records. Our interview with Bacharach and Costello was produced by Amy Sallet. Coming up, the best books of the year, as chosen by our book critic, Maureen Corrigan. This is Fresh Air. May not have been such a good year for the politics of peace, love, and understanding, but it was a very good year for fiction. Here's book critic Maureen Corrigan's Best Books of the Year list.
Those lit crit Grinches who look toward the end of the millennium with dread and continue to tiresomely pronounce the death of the novel clearly haven't bothered to read much new fiction lately. For if they had, they would be overwhelmed by the bounty of good books that writers, both fresh and seasoned, have cranked out this year. Every time a superb first novel, like Martha Cooley's The Archivist, appears, its hearty voice drowns out the mewlings of literary doomsayers. The Archivist focuses on T.S. Eliot's private life and reveals that the great poet was by no means a hollow man. The Hours by Michael Cunningham is another old English major's delight. It recreates times three the situation of Virginia Woolf's novel, Mrs. Dalloway. Ethan Kanan's amazing For Kings and Planets invokes the mood of The Great Gatsby. Far from being shamed by the comparison, Kanan's novel shimmers. And shifting literary sources somewhat, Robert Hellinga's magnificent The Fall of a Sparrow turns to the classics for inspiration. Like Homer's Ulysses, Hellinga's hero stumbles into unwanted adventures, including a confrontation with terrorists, before sailing home to a measured peace. Onward now to the old prose. The antic grace of John Irving's A Widow for 1 Year made this awestruck reader fall down and worship. Irving's story opens in a death-haunted house and ends 4 decades later with a wedding in that very same house. Like the great Victorian novelists whose work his own sprawling books consciously resemble, Irving is an author god whose grand fictional designs encompass the whole of life. In Philip Roth's latest novel, I Married a Communist, a character does a riff on the televised Nixon funeral that's so brilliant, it alone should win Roth the Medal of Freedom, one of the few prizes, along with the Nobel, he hasn't been awarded. Alice McDermott's Charming Billy, which just deservedly won the National Book Award, is a controlled masterpiece about loss and fleeting time and the foolish valor of remaining loyal to dreams that will never come true. Another National Book Award winner, Holes by Lewis Sachar, is an amazing young adult novel that takes place in, of all unlikely places, a boy's juvenile detention camp. It's a marvel of a story. Buy it for a kid you know and read it first yourself. Other literary genres also produced sugar plums in 1998. Lori Moore's short story collection, Birds of America, is distinguished by her trademark laughing-in-the-dark tone. Dorothy Herman's nuanced portrait of Helen Keller in her biography, Helen Keller, A Life, gives us a human Helen, who liked her martinis and mink coats, and who advocated birth control, women's rights, and socialism. Everybody Was So Young, Amanda Vale's captivating biography of Lost Generation patrons Gerald and Sarah Murphy, corrected my mistaken impression of the Murphys as artistic parasites. Rather, it's world-class moochers like Hemingway and Fitzgerald who come out looking shabby here. Vale demonstrates that the Murphys deserve to be celebrated in their own right, if for no other reason, for bringing to perfection the concept of summer vacation. Vacation always makes me think of mysteries, and I stumbled upon a treasure this year. Charles Todd's remarkable post-World War I novel, Wings of Fire. Todd's hero is a Scotland Yard inspector who's partnered with the ghost of a shell-shocked corporal. This detective pairing of the quick and the dead might have produced something contrived and cute, but the mournful and highly literary texture of Todd's mystery places it in a category closer to Pat Barker's World War I trilogy than it does to Topper. The mystery of why Ted Hughes decided this year to break his long silence about Sylvia Plath in his poetry collection called Birthday Letters was sadly solved last month when Hughes died of cancer. Some of these narrative poems are marvelous, baffled and angry, vivid and raw. All those years of living in the shadow of Lady Lazarus clearly taught the once taciturn Hughes a thing or two about the pleasures of finally giving way to fury.
Maureen Corrigan teaches literature at Georgetown University. Her list of the year's best books appears on our website, www.freshair.com. Seated in the vacationing director's chair today was our executive producer, Danny Miller. Dorothy Farabee is our administrative assistant. Our engineer is Bob Purdick. I'm Terry Gross. Thank you.
Support for Fresh Air comes from the listeners of WHYY in Philadelphia, where Fresh Air is produced, and from Mannheim Steamroller, whose new release, The Christmas Age, is available in music stores. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
On the next Fresh Air, we look back on the best movies of the year with our film critic John Powers and the best pop music of the year with our rock critic Ken Tucker. I'm Terry Gross. Join us for the next Fresh Air.